The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Stress-induced hair loss is a phenomenon called telogen effluvium, which we've been seeing for years and decades. It's unique during this time because, you know, it's not just people that are having COVID that we're seeing hair loss.
The dermatologists at the Cleveland Clinic tell us they have been very busy lately because hair loss isn't always an immediate response to stress.
The hair is on a three-month delay, so what we see today is a result of what happened, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. Now, I've had many patients come in and they said, hey, I had COVID before. 2 or 3 months later, they're now shedding. Other people say, you know, I haven't been sick. I feel okay, but I'm just stressed about life. And we're seeing, you know, shedding that's been going on for months.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you know, I came across a fascinating story. And maybe this is affecting you. During the Chapel of Divine Mercy, so often I hear from women who call me and they pray for what is, I think, a really important intention. They pray for their hair loss. You know, they always excuse it like it's not that important, but hey, losing your hair can be very traumatic, can be very, very difficult. And I've been seeing more of these reports. And I came across a headline, which then led me to the story. It said, the year America's hair fell out. The pandemic has been a near-perfect mass hair loss event, said the headline. And as I was reading through the article, as you heard in that piece there, too, this person shared what they went through and how they used all these different products and how they learned from, you know, the research that, you know, hair loss can be temporary. It can be permanent. It has a lot of causes. It could be hereditary. You know, it runs in the family, perhaps. Chronic illness or nutritional deficiency could cause hair loss. I even heard, I don't know how true this is, but your ponytail being too tight, right? Your hair being pulled back like that can also cause hair loss. But one type of loss is responsible for pandemic hair loss is called this telogen effluvium. TE is what they call it. And it can be sudden and be very dramatic. And it's caused by the ordinary traumas of human existence in all of the, you know, all the hideous varieties that sometimes come in life. There can be physical, emotional stress that can, they say, push as much as 70% of your hair into the telogen phase of its growth cycle, which then will halt those strands, halt the growth and disconnect it from the blood supply. And, you know, in time, you know, your hair gets knocked out of your head. So I thought, look, let's talk a little bit about this today. What is causing it? How do you remedy it? Are there alternative or natural treatments for this? How do you deal with that type of stress? And then one other aspect of this conversation. We'll talk about some alternative medicines here, or alternative approaches, I should say. There's a book that my producer, Tom, had read, and he just loves this. He keeps saying to me, we got to get this guy on. We got to get this guy on. We got to get this guy on. It was written by a man named Ross Douthat. And, he says it's called The Deep Place, or The Deep Places. It's a memoir of illness and discovery by Ross Douthat, he says. And what it does, it basically tells the author's story of dealing with chronic Lyme's disease. And, you know, this is something that has been debated in the medical community. Douthat is a token conservative. He's a columnist for the New York Times. And his memoir tells the story of his purchase of a home in southern Connecticut near the town of Lyme. And a friend of mine is also a physician, and he was sharing with me, because he's from the Connecticut area, grew up there. So did my father. It's where he was from. Lyme, Connecticut, that's where the first case of Lyme disease came from. It's where the tick-borne disease was first identified. And it was while inspecting his home, you know, that he thinks he was bitten. And from then on, for the next 3 years, he went through numerous doctors. Yeah, some doctors, after they couldn't determine what it was, they go back telling him, well, you're doing okay. You know, I think it might be psychological. Others believing him, but following typical courses of action that didn't help him. And others tried a more radical approach. And those radical approaches provided help. Not enough to kick it all out. But in the end, what Mr. Douthat did was a lot of experiments on himself. He experimented using different prescribed drugs. Some seemed to help. Timing his intake of them with the outbreak of certain symptoms. But check this out. And this is what I'm going to talk about. He also started some alternative forms of treatment. He started to take herbs. He started to take large doses of vitamins. He changed his diet. I think it has a lot to do with it, too. I think what we put into our body has profound impact on our health. Now, here's one that I'm really, I don't know much about. I would initially probably be skeptical on it, but it worked for him. There's a therapy that he used dealing with vibrations at certain frequencies to attack the disease. I'm not quite sure how it worked, but, you know, using vibrations, we know that the earth even has resonates with a certain frequency. So could we use frequencies in some way to affect the cells or disease or bring health? I don't know. In a moment, Dr. Sean O'Mara will be stopping by. He's a man who's intimately connected not only with Western medicine, but the importance of diet and alternative approaches. Final thought here, and we'll open the conversation up, okay? Dalfat is not alone, okay, in using these techniques. There's a woman, I think, in Kentucky. I think that's where she is. I know who's brought a lot of healing to a lot of people using these types of treatments. So they're called complementary or integrative or holistic therapies, right? And the number of people using them is growing tremendously, really, over the past 20 years. So the sales of, dietary supplements has grown by at least 5% each year for the last couple years. And with COVID, I bet those numbers are even higher. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about traditional medicine dealing with health, but let's also deal with some of these alternative treatments, some of this integrative medicine. And if you've had experience with it, love to hear from you. We also got to be careful, you know, because some of this stuff like Reiki and some of this other new age type of stuff, crystals, you know, we got to be really careful. The church is very clear on staying away from that type of stuff. But I've invited today the medical director of Whole Health Care at the VA hospital in St. Cloud, Minnesota, Dr. Sean O'Mara, back to the conversation. Doctor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Great to be back with you again and the Relevant Radio audience. What a great topic.
Yeah, it is. And I know that, you have provided health care as a physician to, world figures, world leaders around the world, including those in our own nation here. And so you're intimately connected, but you also have, used alternative approaches to bringing health and healing to a lot of people. When we're talking about alternative or whole health, maybe we can define our terms before we get into more deep conversation on this. What are those kind of things that we're talking about, and why do you place credence in them?
Well, there are so many different treatments that come in within the category of alternative care. But basically, it's taking a more natural approach to things and staying away from more conventional pharmaceutical approaches and medical procedures. So looking to nature and looking to our environment and our bodies really to heal themselves. And that's a really growing body of science. When I went to medical school, we were taught that it didn't really work, and it was really kind of frustrated people that they get involved in those kind of therapies. So I was a conventional trained emergency medicine physician, but I had multiple medical problems just like most people. And then I changed my diet, just cut out processed foods, and every single medical condition I had either went away or was substantially better, and I was shocked. I felt like I had been a fraud practicing as an MD, emergency medicine physician, and that I'd been part of a system that really was labeling people as crazy for pursuing more natural approaches to care. And I decided, well, I better research this because, that this was so profound in my own life. So I started doing MRIs on people and looking at chronic disease, testing out various things like walking and sunshine and eating healthy and, standing more and sitting less, just basic interventions. And lo and behold, those things really eradicated disease and improved people's lifestyle and their level of health. So I became an integrative medical physician. And today I work as the medical director, as you said, for holistic health for the VA, and thankfully the VA is looking at whole health alternative therapies because there is good science behind it that it works. Veterans are asking for it, and we think we can provide better care and save more money to the VA system and ultimately meet the goals of veterans and patients using alternative care, holistic health. So I'm super excited to be here talking to you about this topic.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And I watched a documentary on mushrooms recently and hallucinogenics and how it has liberated people from depression, anxiety, a whole lot of other things, to a physician I knew. He's a Chinese doctor. He's trained in China, an expert in Western medicine, works in a prominent hospital in Philadelphia. But he's also big into acupuncture. And before I got into talk radio, when I was doing some like industrial type of work, I did a project for this doctor on alternative on acupressure, and I interviewed people who traditional medicines had no help for. In fact, a friend of mine went to this guy. She had a real balance problem, and they were trying to treat it. In the end, you know, from a couple, you know, pins or pricks or you know whatever he did, he totally resolved her issue. So the spectrum is pretty broad, and it's really wide. Where are we today? I would think that for centuries, you know, we had natural remedies to bring about health. Of course, we probably ate a lot better, didn't have those processed food either. But I see a place for both. I don't see an either or. I think the mix of Western medicine along with, you know, alternative or natural remedies, if we could find a happy medium, I think we'd all have better health. But your thoughts on that? Is there a way to blend the two?
No, I completely agree. And that's why I practice integrative medicine. So I continue to be an MD, licensed physician, prescribing medications. But typically, it's not the first thing I'll reach for. It is in an emergency situation. When you got an acute issue and time is of the essence and you need to do something very quickly, then I quickly convert to my training, my conventional training as an emergency medicine physician, trained for 4 years in a residency, and that's what I use. But if I have time, it's diabetes, it's obesity, it's arthritis, it's rash, it's mental illness, I will treat it through natural therapies and approaches. But if it's a sudden heart attack or a cardiac dysrhythmia that I have to correct quickly with some medications, then that's what I'll use. So, yeah, great question. I do believe that the roles work well together. Physicians and providers who are caring for patients need to understand when a patient is best served using more natural therapies and when they're best served using more conventional approaches. And I just hope that medical schools today will increasingly take a look at alternative therapies and begin to introduce physicians so they're more open-minded to it, because the typical patient with chronic disease just gets more and more medicines. They get more ill. They never get better. They never turn them around. And alternative therapy looks to really improve the level of health, reverse the disease process. And I think that sets it apart from a lot of the conventional approaches that that is typically taken, where we just treat people and continue long-term prescription drugs. And there is a much better way, I think, if you manage your diet, manage your lifestyle, lifestyle interventions and strategies for living better, have more of an enduring impact on the level of health that you have, which we call as physicians health span, and your longevity, how long you live, which is lifespan. So absolutely, I think the two work together, conventional healthcare with alternative holistic health. Yeah. And they, when they're properly understood and used by both providers and availed to by patients, I think the outcome is superb.
You and I have talked many times about your gut health, you know, your microbiome and how critical that is, and health science is really beginning to understand that. I saw an article, we'll get to it maybe a little bit later in the conversation, on probiotics and mental health. But Frank, who is listening in Philadelphia, has a question about mental health. Frank, good afternoon. I appreciate you calling. Good afternoon. Thanks
hey,
for joining
Drew.
Us.
Hey, doctor. It wasn't hey, mental Frank. Health, it was just medical problems. Doctor, around the year 2000, I was diagnosed with first, they called it rod cone dystrophy. Later, they called it retinitis pigmentosa. Also, neuropathy, but just began in the big toe. Now, I got polyneuropathy really bad throughout my whole body. The eyes are really almost gone. Have digestion problems. The GI doctors told me I can't digest food right. Yeah, I don't absorb carbs, protein, and fats the right way, or vitamins or minerals. Allergies every day, real bad. I mean, it started with just a minor thing. Now, it's the whole body, and they have no idea what's causing it. I just started IVIG in August of this year. Any recommendations?
Yeah, so it typically, those kind of conditions and symptoms that you're describing, it goes to what we would generally categorize as an autoimmune condition, under autoimmune contribution. So your physicians are treating with IVIG, immunoglobulin, but what would probably belie all of this is something that is diminish your own body's immune system, which is your ability, the body's ability to fight off disease. So I would recommend that you take a look at for alternative therapies, and it's really not that alternative. It's just new to both alternative therapy and conventional healthcare. Look at your visceral fat. Go get your past CT scans or any MRIs that you had. Mm-hmm. Look at your visceral fat. Get rid of your visceral fat and watch your conditions improve. We're finding out that visceral fat causes a lot of release of inflammatory conditions that are triggering a lot of autoimmune conditions and chronic disease in general. So that's something that you can safely do, and I'd recommend you probably already had an abdominal CT at some point in your life with those kind of conditions, or an MRI of your abdomen. Yeah. If not, the cheaper scan is a DEXA scan. But MRI and CT give you better resolution of it, and you're going to want to read about visceral fat and get rid of it. Great question,
all right,
Frank.
Let me just follow up on that, because that's the million-dollar question. Who doesn't want to lose some visceral fat, right? I mean, especially if it's linked to all these problems that you're talking about, but it's hard to do that. Strategies, you know, what would you say to somebody right now who's saying, gosh, I have autoimmune problems, or, you know, I have another physician on who's been talking about inflammation and how that really is the cause of a lot of health problems that we have. And if you can get your inflammation under control, then you're going to find a change in health as well. How do you tackle weight loss? I mean, that's the million-dollar question. If you got a secret to that, then you know, we'll change the health of the country.
Yeah. Well, great. Those are fantastic areas. So inflammation, in my opinion, after practicing medicine for 25 years, chiefly most of that inflammation is driven by diet, and it's mediated through the development and acquisition of visceral fat. So as you eat, when you make poor choices in what you eat, Drew, it contributes to the deposition of visceral fat that starts to grow and really live inside of you. I mean, it's just like a living endocrine gland secreting highly inflammatory substances go throughout your body, causing disease. So the biggest thing I have found after researching visceral fat for 10 years for eliminating visceral fat is eliminating processed foods from your diet. We study a series of MRIs and numerous individuals. I've scanned 5,000 people for visceral fat. And the number one way to get rid of that is eliminating visceral fat, eliminating processed foods from diet. So if you just start eating whole foods, you know, meat and vegetables in whole form, you'll greatly abate and eliminate visceral fat from your diet. And then when it comes to weight loss, mm-hmm. you know, fix the body. Too many people are chasing weight loss. It's you know, if you're chasing numbers, you're trying to get smaller. What you really want to do is get rid of bad tissue, you know, the fat that causes inflammation. Believe it or not, there's a lot of fat in your body that doesn't cause any problem. And there's even fat inside your body that you want that actually helps you be more healthy. So it's not just eliminating fat or just losing weight. You want to lose the right thing. So how you live your life allows your body to get rid of diseased tissue like visceral fat and to promote good tissue like muscle, skeletal muscle, and smooth muscle, these beautiful muscles that line your arteries and veins mm-hmm. that almost nobody knows about. But how you make choices in your life, how you live, and goes well beyond diet, all contribute to these systems that make up your body, your gut, your microbiome, your arteries, your veins, your organs. And as one thing I've noticed is as you get more healthy, everything improves. It's not like just one thing improves and improves all over. So if you can improve the arteries in the brain, you'll improve the arteries in the heart and the legs and the feet and the hands to your kidneys. So it's all connected, and our bodies, scripture tells Corinthians, or, our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. And we're called to be custodians of God's temple. His Holy Spirit dwells in there with our soul. And we ought to be far better at this, and the church should be really teaching and setting an example how to be better custodians of the temple of God. And we take better care of churches. We take better care of our cars than we do our bodies. It's really beyond the point where, we should be doing something about it. This is, people are dying, the quality of their life that they're suffering. The ability to serve God and to serve their fellow man is compromised because of disease that's permitted to go into people's bodies and stay there. And it's not their fault. We just don't teach. Physicians aren't taught to do it. Yep. There's a lot of money to be made treating disease. It's the largest part of our economy. It's bigger than the internet. It's bigger than oil. No other part of our economy is larger than healthcare. And over 90% of that is simply treating chronic disease that's completely reversible. Think of what we could do with the money if we just got rid of chronic disease, and we could use it to do much more worthwhile programs.
You got it. My guest today, Dr. Sean O'Mara. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to just take a short pause if you're on hold. I'll get you on the air. And if you have a question or a comment, you want to join the conversation, pull up a chair right now. You can dial in 888-914-9149. We'd love to have you join us here as we take a look at your health. Everything from your gut biome to hair loss to alternative medicine to visceral fat, you name it. Your body is the temple, right, of the Holy Spirit. We need to keep it healthy. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The idea that the microbes in your intestines vastly affect the way your brain and nervous system function. The link had previously not been made. There is, in fact, a war going on in your gut. The so-called good bacteria are pitted against the so-called bad bacteria. Now, who's winning this fight is of great importance to you. These bacteria can affect everything from mood to obesity levels. Both bacteria control important levers in the enteric nervous system, which in turn cause chemical cascades that affect all parts of your body, right up to your brain. An overabundance of the bad guys, for example, causes an imbalance that results in some very common psychological problems. While the good guys, on the other hand, can help keep us relaxed, they do this by releasing GABA and stimulating the vagus nerve, amongst other things. This collective of gut bacteria is known as the microbiome. They live inside you, in symbiosis. You need them, and they need you.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I hope you were able to get all of that. It really is a fascinating frontier. It's an area of medicine I think you're going to encounter in the not too distant future. My guest today, Dr. Sean O'Mara, is intimately connected with the importance of your gut biome. They often say that your second brain plays a major role in mood and mental fluctuation or function, I should say. I look at these numbers of anxiety and depression, especially amongst the young today, and I thought, I don't ever remember that when I was growing up, and it seems to be an epidemic amongst this generation. And as I was listening to that piece, I was saying to myself, I wonder what role the gut biome plays in that. I mean, we do know it has an effect on mental health. When I was talking to Dr. O'Mara before, we talked about serial killers and their gut biome. And this brain-gut axis, the pathways that exist between the brain and the gut, I think it's an intriguing area that deserves even more conversation. So can your gut biome, can that affect your mental health? Researchers have uncovered a lot of evidence saying the answer is yes. Doctor, it's good to have you back. I'm joined by Dr. Sean O'Mara. If you want to get in, I know the lines are looking pretty busy right now. We'll get your calls in a quick second. Doctor, let's pick it up on the gut biome if we could, okay? Mental health. Does anxiety and depression, is there a link to your gut health and all that? What about this connection to serial killers? We've talked about that in the past, another part of our health.
Yeah, absolutely connected. So we see that in studies that you have a 17% chance of developing anxiety, approximately 17% chance in one study, just from a single dose or course of antibiotics, I should say course. So what that means is the antibiotic that is prescribed to go in and thwart one particular type of bacteria, unfortunately, is not designed to just go after one bacteria. It affects many microbes. And so you need to think of your gut microbe as a safari, you know, lots of different animals. So, you know, if there was one bad lion that was just killing way too many antelope, it's as though we go down and slay all everything. We take out the zebras, the tigers, the lions, the alligators, the birds, you know, the iguanas, everything goes. It gets impaired by that antibiotic. So judicious use of antibiotics is the answer there. We only want to use an antibiotic when we really need. And we need to consider using bacteria against other bacteria. So that rather than just using an antibiotic, which just goes in and kills microbes, using selective microbes selectively. And that's happening with fecal microbiota transplants. We're starting to see that, just giving healthy stool content from one human into another. We do that in animal models, and that's where we learned about behavior and mental illness. We could see mental illness was being was associated and caused by these microbes. So it's really, really interesting work, but very early on, and we need to do a better job. And I always make a pitch. If you're a taxpayer, talk to your congressmen and senators, have this funded so we can take a look at this and study it. Because as far as I'm aware, nobody is really looking at its connection, particularly to active shooters and sex offenders. And I think these microbes are driving a lot of this criminal behavior, and we just need to research and study it.
Yeah. Hey, does fasting impact your microbiome?
It does indeed. So numerous studies have shown that the practice of fasting causes a change, a shift in the microbes within the gut in a more favorable direction. So nature would have allowed us to fast. It just would have arranged for it through circumstance. We wouldn't always have had food and the ability to eat. And so what we find out is not only our microbiome improves, but our gut and our bodies improve as we fast. So fasting is one of the best interventions and strategies. I work with patients and individuals who want to optimize their health to get them into a dedicated practice of fasting and to increase, you know, lots of people fast, you know, for what's called intermittent for a few hours a day. But, you know, if you fast longer, I don't think you have to do a 40-day fast.
Right.
Some people do. But a 2 or 3 day fast actually can be something that you can work towards over, you know, course of weeks or months, and actually get to a point where you can fast for three or four days and do really well. You'll feel fantastic. It's a wonderful thing. I regularly fast 3 to 4 days almost every week.
That's fantastic. All right, I'm going to take some calls, but let me indulge myself with one last question because our lines are stacked here.
Sure.
Fecal transplants. I've got a friend who's a gastroenterologist, and he's talked about this many times, and he's kind of an expert, one of the leading figures in that area right now. Could somebody with obesity have a transplant with somebody who could, you know, who tends to have a very thin body type? Would they find themselves losing weight? How does that work? Just by changing the microbiome?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. So the way it works is there are obesogenic microbes, microbes that generate obesity, and there are also microbes that allow you to become thin and lose weight.
Wow.
So these are the new strategies we need to look at. There are strong limitations and restrictions on fecal microbiota transplants today. We can only do them currently. They're only authorized and approved by the FDA for treatments of C. difficile infection. Mm-hmm. But we can go back and study people that have had FMTs, for short, we call them, and we can see where it's actually eradicated other disease they have. Like people have been cured of Crohn's disease when they get a donor who's super healthy. And in one case, 11 out of 19 patients that got cured from Crohn's got their donation from a single guy. And wow. We call that guy a super donor or a super pooper, just for fun. But they really have this extra microbes that cure people. And that's going to be the future, Drew. I'll just share with the audience. You're going to see a lot of treatment instead of antibiotics and medications. We're going to treat with microbes that will go in and just cure chronic disease and conditions that people have. And I'm super excited about the future.
That's so great. Maggie, you just got a tweet, didn't you? You were sharing with me during the break. Somebody was asking about Crohn's, right?
Yes. Hold on. Let me pull that up here. Someone said, what about Crohn's disease? Does diet help with that? My kid is 16 and has it.
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend that person because if they've had Crohn's, they have CT. And if you're listening right now, you go get your kid's CT exam and you look at that visceral fat. You get radiologists don't read this. The radiologists and VA said, teach us how to read visceral fat, Dr. Merrow. The radiologist asked me to do this. It's that important. So that person, get a hold of Drew. I'll help that person, Drew. You get, if they call you, I'll figure out a way to get that read. But get the visceral fat read. Get your child to lose visceral fat. And eat a low inflammatory diet, cut out processed foods, and rather than taking immune suppressing drugs, I recommend dietary adjustments. And Crohn's is something that is very amenable to alternative therapies over a period of time. They should have very good outcome if they change their diet and get rid of that visceral fat.
All right, let's jump into the phones. My gratitude to everyone who's waiting patiently to join the conversation. I'll do my best to get you. Jay is listening in New Jersey. Following up on that question, I think, with antibiotics. Hi, Jay. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I had two quick questions. One was, basically, through my doctors, I've been on almost a lifetime of antibiotics, so I don't know if there's any way to reverse that. And two is, you mentioned processed foods, and I wasn't quite sure what counts as that. Like, for instance, would instant oatmeal or Cheerios count as processed food?
All right. Great questions.
Yes. So I'll take the last one. I think I heard Cheerios. So anything that is not in a natural form or its whole form is processed. So even oatmeal is processed, unfortunately. So you basically just want to eat vegetables and you want to eat meat. It's the safest way of eating food in a non-processed form. So if it is in a bag or a box or a container, it's going to be processed with probably additives and chemicals and food preservatives to keep things fresh. You know, do so by stopping bacteria. And so they stop and they kill the bacteria in your gut. So when you're eating these processed foods with the food preservatives, they're disrupting the microbiome. Here, how do they get away with it? Because they are only required to study its impact directly on human cells, not the microbes inside your gut. So here, this incredible harmful practice of food preserves going down there, leading to cancer, leading to heart attacks and strokes, are not being studied because they only look at that food preservative's direct impact on human cells instead of the microbes. And that's where the disease is coming in, when you change those microbes. So great question. I highly recommend you cut out that processed foods. And hopefully you can get off these antibiotics and not need to keep taking them. Great question.
Hey, thank you very much. Maggie, we were talking about the serial killers. You were mentioning something about the Twinkie defense. Why don't you share that with Dr. O'Mara?
Someone else just reached out to us on Twitter and said, remember the Twinkie defense by Dan White and the Harvey Milk murder? This fits your subject today with regard to diet and mental health, which... I mean, I have to say, it kind of does.
Are you familiar with that at all, Doctor?
Yeah. Yeah, I am actually. You know, you may have forgotten, I am a former criminal prosecutor. And I think back at all the people that I have put in jail and how I gave precious little, I'll just be honest, I gave no consideration to the potential scientific impact and influence. And when that Twinkie defense came out, it was prior to my going to medical school, I dismissed it out of hand like most people. But I'll tell you, the connection is real, and we ought not to dismiss it out of hand. We need to devote more money to researching how diet contributes to microbes, which contribute to behavioral changes, which lead to changes in the capacity to make decisions and actually influence people. Here's a good example. If you're listening right now and you doubt that, let me ask you a question. Have you ever eaten some food that you cannot stop eating? You can't stop eating. You feel like you're going to die if you can't eat it. Right. Well, I'll tell you why. It's because microbes inside of you are influencing that behavior. Right. So when you quickly dismiss somebody because they're involved in a crime, you think it's out of the question, I'm just going to tell you, we need to study this. We just don't have enough information about this. I was a very hardcore conservative prosecutor,
right.
But to this day, we really do need to look at science. And I do believe that connection is real and warrants further investigation.
All right. Well, such a fascinating conversation, Doctor. I just love it. We could go in so many directions. Let me go to Phoenix, Arizona next. Dee Dee is wanting to join the conversation. She's got a great question. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hi. Dr. Sean. I'm half Italian, and the holidays are coming up, and we drink a lot of red wine. So my question is, I'm sorry, this is kind of funny. I think it's a stupid question, but anyway. What impact does drinking alcohol have on the biome, the gut?
Yeah, so it's not a stupid question. It's an important question, and I hear it a lot. So my recommendations actually pertaining to alcohol is that you should only consume, if you're going to imbibe on alcohol, only consume a low carbohydrate wine. It tends to have less of an impact on the pathogenic microbes. So these microbes that cause addiction and cravings and obesity and weight gain and chronic disease tend to prefer sugars and sweet things. That's why we're always eating that kind of food. But a low carb wine like a Cabernet Sauvignon doesn't provide as much of an impact, raising your blood sugar with a corresponding increase in your insulin. So my recommendation is a very small amount of wine. I myself always consume less than a glass of wine at a time, and it's a red wine for the phenolic compounds and the other beneficial molecules that are more present in red wine than white wine. And those are my recommendations. And it's good timing at the holidays. So it's more than, just a lesson against all things in moderation. You really should limit the amount of alcohol you have. Scriptures warn us, don't be drunk with wine. It's really an important lesson. You just should not be drinking a lot of alcohol. It's very taxing on your liver, on your metabolism. But a small amount of wine, Timothy says, is good for the stomach, and it's probably because of its contributions to the microbiome. I think they are. Red wine, dry red wine, does make some positive contributions.
See, I can't do just a half a glass of red wine, Doctor. So too much is no good, is what you're saying? Of course, in excess, it's no good. But really, I mean, what would you say is a reasonable limit? You're saying 4 ounces, 3 ounces, seven?
Well, what's interesting, Drew, is that people have different capacities. So if you have fatty liver disease, if you have consumed too much, more than most people, your capacity for tolerating that alcohol is going to be a lot less. I mean, you might be able to drink and have a higher degree of tolerance. You may not, act as intoxicated, but you're getting way more damage to your liver than the person who has been a teetotaler all their life and suddenly drinks 4 glasses of wine.
Yeah,
so
gotcha.
If you're somebody that's it's basically, consumed way more than you should have, then you better be drinking a very, very small amount because we see the impact through the nervous system, through the cardiac system in terms of atrial fibrillations, contributions from alcohol is very real. We call it holiday heart because a lot of people imbibe in alcohol during the holiday, and we see them coming in the ER with atrial fibrillation with rapid ventricular response. So, yeah, it's real. And I just think when it comes to alcohol, we should be drinking moderate amounts, especially if you've been a heavy drinker for any portion of your lifetime.
All right, that's well said. Doctor, I'm going to take a short pause. We'll come back. We'll grab a few more calls. My guest today, Dr. Sean O'Mara. We're taking a look at alternative approaches to your health, everything from the gut biome to diet to various treatments. And if you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. We only have about 10, 15 minutes left, so stay with me. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester. Hey, good to be with you today. Thank you for joining me, taking a look at alternative medicines. Or really, let me rephrase that. We're taking a look at alternative approaches, integrative approaches to your health. And it spans the spectrum of things you can do. Gut biome, to me, is fascinating. We talked a couple hours on that. I also think of cancer. One in three Americans at some point in their life will have some form of cancer. And I think of Steve Jobs, who went down the alternative route. It didn't pan out so well with him. But a lot of people don't like the thought of chemo or radiation, and they want to try an alternative approach to it. The established scientific community, of course, looks at it, you know, these alternative medicines as quackery. My question is there merit to any of this? And Dr. O'Mara, who has been a longtime friend of the show, and I'm so grateful to have him here with us today, is the medical director of the Whole Healthcare, at the VA hospital in St. Cloud, Minnesota, former prosecutor and physician to many of the of world dignitaries and elite, and it's good to have him back. Now, doctor, let me just pick up on that point regarding cancer, because a lot of people are affected by it. And I know some people might say, hey, I've tried these alternative remedies, and they certainly worked. Where does that fit in something as life-threatening as cancer? And we know Steve Jobs, who had all the money in the world, looked into that, and I don't think it panned out that well for him.
Yeah, so we don't really understand the differences in people, why sometimes alternative treatments work and sometimes they don't. It likely is as simple as the micro or complex is the microbiome. Everybody's microbiome is different. And so the common pathway that I think we're going to find out that our health is being influenced is through these microbes. It's a black box that we don't understand well. So some people respond to these alternative treatments. Some people respond to chemotherapy in the same way, very differently. It doesn't always work as well for people. And so this difference in outcome is seen in conventional therapy and conventional medications, as well as an alternative therapy. So it's interesting, there was a study that gave everybody ice brownies, and they went around and looked at blood sugar, and they found that people whose blood sugar didn't go up when they ate these chocolate iced brownies had a certain species of microbes inside of them that prevented their blood sugar from going up, and they didn't gain weight. So really, it may be as simple as the type of species of microbes that you have in you allows you to have a better outcome. So we need to study it more and figure out ways that our lifestyle affects those microbes that live inside of us.
All right. We'll go to Lincoln, California next. Genevieve has been waiting. Genevieve, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for answering my call. So I have, my son was diagnosed with Crohn's at the age of 6 years old. And it was mild, but our GI doctor gave us two options, Remicade or what is called the special carbohydrate diet. So we immediately put him on the special carbohydrate diet. He had a colonoscopy at the age of 7 and the Crohn's was gone.
Wow.
So he has been able to maintain with absolutely no medication except a probiotic his Crohn's through diet for 10 years, which has been wonderful. He's had a few, you know, basically the special carbohydrate diet is, like you mentioned, cutting out processed foods. And as he got older, he introduced a little more and he was able to maintain it. Unfortunately, COVID happened and he was at home and decided to change his diet. And recently, within the past couple weeks, had to be hospitalized because he had a flare, which he's never had. And they, you know, were waiting for his biopsy. He is on prednisone for Crohn's, like I said, for the very first time. And so his body is going through all these changes that he didn't experience because he's been on this diet for 10 years.
Wow,
being a 16-year-old, it's more challenging, right? You're dealing with going through drive-thrus with your friends, and he's been able to maintain this. My question to you is, we're giving him the choice now because it's his life, it's his body. We know what the repercussions are, and he does too. We have to meet with the doctor in a couple of days to discuss the options, which most likely will be, one of them will be medication just to get him into remission. But I wanted to know, and I don't know if you've encountered this or not, we want to get him, and I say we, my husband and I, and hopefully him, back to a functional medicine or diet-based way because of all the side effects, even the side effects he's encountering right now on prednisone. Yep. Have you encountered this situation at all? And if so, could you give some insider tips on how we can, like, transition him once he's in remission again, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. So this is, what a great story. A lot of people are probably thinking the same thing. Yeah, this kid needs to go back on that diet. Absolutely. That's what I would say. I would recommend looking at the side effects of Remicade and prednisone. These are immune suppressing medications. They have a place when they're really indicated. But in this case, your son has done so well on limiting his carbohydrates. He needs to return to that. That would be my absolute recommendation. Lots of physicians say, hey, eat whatever you want, and we'll prescribe the medicines to fix it, deal with any problems. So literally, that's what I've had some of my patients tell me, doctors have told them. But I will tell you that you want to start with the diet. You don't want to start with the medication. In your son's case, he started with the diet, and then he changed it, and he got worse. So I think it's a no-brainer. I think he's 16 years old. If he was my son, 18 years old, it would be the very earliest I would be allowing him to make decisions that are going to impair his life like that, and it potentially his life-threatening. Remicade could give him lots of complications that could end up he could lose his life with a bad infection with immune suppressing qualities of these anti immune suppressing medications that he's taking. So that's my recommendation. Get him back on that diet, and I think he'll do a lot better.
It's amazing what diet has done for him and how COVID changed that. I mean, it's a great call from Genevieve, just to underline part of the conversation we had. We have about a minute or two left. Let me just quickly go to Hope in Modesto, California as well. Hope, you got to make it quick. Good afternoon.
Yes, hello. I have been told by two different doctors that I'm a massive heart attack waiting to happen. My cholesterol is sky high every time I go get blood work. Mm-hmm. It's something I inherited. They've got me on Gemfibrozil, 1,200 milligrams a day. And I don't know what else I can do. It's not what I eat.
I'll tell you what, I hope I got to hold you right there because I've got about 30 seconds. Doctor, people with high cholesterol, what can they do?
Yeah, I would recommend cleaning up their diet, get rid of the carbohydrates. That's the best thing you can do to reduce your incidence of heart attacks and strokes is clean up that diet, walk, sit less, but cut out processed foods. That's really going to diminish your risk for heart attacks and strokes. Medication is not so as effective as dietary intervention.
Hey, Sean, always good to have you here. I'm so grateful for your expertise. My apologies to everyone on hold. I'd love you to come back where we could do this again. And we'll do it in the not-too-distant future. That's Dr. Sean O'Mara. Say a prayer for him. Say a prayer for me. I'll do the same for you.